Boom, we're on. Three. Today's guest, we've got bodyguard Simon Newton. How are you, brother?
How you doing, mate? I'm good.
Yeah, it's good to see you.
And you?
Looking well, man.
Trying to.
Yeah.
Getting there.
Yeah, it's a weird time, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you've been in the army.
Yeah.
British Army, you went to then open up your own security company?
In between, I worked in the Middle East as a freelance bodyguard.
Yeah, and you've worked
security company.
Some of the biggest celebrities in the world.
I've been that as well on top.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, it's been a funny old journey, yeah. Really.
How have you been?
All right, yeah. I mean, it's like you just said, things are changing a little bit at the moment, aren't they? But
yeah.
I mean, no, it's been all right. It's been good. We've been ticking over. The security company is still, you know, doing what it should be. So, in terms of the acting side, I've lost a couple of films this year, unfortunately. I say lost, postponed.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot going on there. We've done quite a lot of bit over the lockdown period.
Yeah. I've obviously checked your profile. You've worked with some mega stars. Is it Kendall Jenner?
Yeah, I did a while with Kendall.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson's probably the biggest
one.
Some
mega names.
Yeah.
I always go back to the start of my guest first, though.
Yeah.
Kind of where you grew up and how it all began.
Yes, yeah, so, I mean, I was born in Eastbourne, East Sussex on the south coast there. Pretty standard schooling, standard sort of family life. I left school, I can't remember how old you really do GCSE, 16, is it? 15, 16?
Yeah, 15, 16.
I didn't really get any of them, to be honest. And I went to get a job. One of my first jobs down here was, I just realised what my first job was. I was dressed as a bear. yeah, I forgot about that. I used to work at a kid's play fair down there, mm-hmm. and I used to dress up as a bear and take the birthday cake in.
yeah.
And to be quite honest, I've told not many people that.
No, you're fucked out, mate, so everybody's going to be shouting
but
on
actually,
you.
Actually, it's probably the best job I've ever had.
Mm-hmm.
If a salary was slightly higher, I'd probably still be doing that job now, to be
safest
honest.
Job, isn't it?
It was great, So that was kind of my first job. After that, I decided that I needed to, I probably needed to get a bit more of a stable career. And I actually got a job in an engineering factory down there. At the time as well, when I was younger, I was an army cadet. A lot of my mates who were in the army cadets with me were joining the army. I was a fat kid, so I couldn't get in, too fat. So I went and got the engineering job, they all joined the army. Got an apprenticeship there. Wasn't really for me, to be honest. I did, you know, I did probably maybe, what, I was 16 there probably, so 16, 17, maybe about 3 years there. Probably scrapped more stuff than I actually sent out the door.
Yeah.
So
quick hand on the back.
I wasn't a natural.
Yeah.
And then I went to join the army. Actually joined, I couldn't get in the regular army to start with, so I ended up joining my local reserve unit. And then I went across. I went straight in. I didn't do that long in the army. All in all, I think it's just short of 5 years.
Yeah, but you were in Iraq and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, I did.
Know?
So I spent a long time in Canada as well. Probably just over a year there. And then I was in Iraq as well.
What was
2000,
that like?
2003. Iraq, to be honest with you, for me, it was probably easily the best time in my military career.
Mm-hmm.
But just as a young lad, I remember it like being back then is probably the better than any lad's holiday I've ever been on.
Mm-hmm.
It was great for me, although obviously some of the things you get to see is not, you know, particularly suitable for anyone's brain really, but I thoroughly enjoyed it. All my life as a young kid, what I wanted to be was a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine being in a football team, you know, training, never getting a game, and then all of a sudden you're playing for England at Wembley or whatever, and that's kind of you know, how I felt with that.
What was your training and stuff like for being, what you said you were a fat kid, to when did you start losing weight, getting fitter?
Yeah, so when it's all changed a bit now, I know, I don't know so much about the military anymore, to be honest, but I finished nearly 2003, so 17,
nearly 20 years ago.
Yeah.
What age are you now?
Yeah, 41.
Fuck's sake, bro.
So, and I don't look at diet. So back then, they used to height to weight ratio to be able to get in. I needed to be about 62 foot tall to get in under my weight, so I had to go away and come back. I think what I did actually is I just started running. Didn't really change diet or anything like that. I just started running. And when I first started running, I think I did 2 lampposts, and that was probably about my maximum at the time. And I added a lamppost on, and that's pretty much how it went.
Yeah.
And obviously, after a bit of time, you start losing a little bit of weight. Maybe people, grandparents, people you don't see all the time, start maybe acknowledging that you've lost a bit of weight. And then, I just carried on from there, really. I think I lost it all in about 6 months. I went from something like around about 22 stone, which was about a 44 inch waist, down to 13 stone, with maybe a 33, 34 waist.
That's some difference, man.
Yeah. When I do things, I mean, I still do that now. I'm still a fat person. I can put weight on quite easily, but I can get it off as now. It's only, what am I now? I'm week 9 of dieting now, and I was a 41 inch waist over lockdown.
So you're going to be up to 19 stone or something again?
I'm 34 now.
Fuck's sake, man. So you're upset, it's all or nothing kind of mentality?
Yeah, yeah. If I want to get it off, I just get it off. And obviously, yeah, with a lot of what I've got going on at the moment, I can't be. Mm-hmm. I can't be overweight.
So what was it like then when you were, long did you say, 4 years, 5 years?
Yeah, just short of five altogether.
Where was the first place you went?
Canada.
What was that like?
That was all right. Most of it was training, live fire training. I did range safety out there for just over a year. That was, mm-hmm, I learned a lot. I was only young. I learned a lot out there.
Did you see any bad stuff in Iraq and stuff? Was there any?
Iraq was a funny time, because when I was there, it was near the end. When it switched from the end of the war into sort of like the second part of it, it actually got worse rather than better. Mm-hmm. And I think everyone underestimated it slightly. And a job I actually had at the time was looking after a couple of American, I'll just use them as officials. And we was in civilian clothing at the time. We went into civilian clothing to do the job. I mean, after probably about not even 6 to 8 weeks, a lot of the military were getting attacked often, and we ended up having to go back into uniform because it started getting rougher and rougher. And around that time as well, private security companies started operating out in Iraq, where a big company, I think it's changed name now, it was Blackwater, which is an American company. A lot of their guys were getting dragged out of vehicles and, you know, set on fire, hung, ambushed. It was happening quite a lot, and it escalated quite quickly, so then we went back into uniform. And around that time, that's when I started seeing private security companies come out into Iraq, which is kind of how I ended up in that job myself, really.
Yeah. The private security, they say the industry's worth over $250 billion a year.
Yeah.
When did that really start kicking off, private security? Has it always been there?
It has always been there, but not to the extent it is today. And certainly back in 2003, when we all kind of started doing it, it went off in a big way. A lot of the contracts out there were normally would have been any other previous conflict, maybe would have been left up to the military to take care of. It was privatised. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot more slots for private security contractors at that time. That's always been there. A lot of the guys, I've worked in Africa, Algeria, Nigeria. It's always been there, but on a lot smaller scale. And probably ever since 2003, Middle East, it's really taken off now. But I think there's a slight decline in it now as well.
Yeah. When you're saying, so from plain clothes into putting your uniform on, is that a big difference where you're more protected, or is it still a free-for-all?
Yeah, I mean, really it was, just because if you're in uniform, I mean, you stand out a lot more, but at the same time, we had... there's no point in being wearing civvies and carrying a machine gun, you know, so we was losing the sort of weapon capability by being dressed in civvies, if you like. So we decided to go back in uniform. We could bear arms as normal, and hoping that, you know, that was kind of benefit us slightly, and it did.
How dangerous is it, Simon, to doing a private bodyguarding compared to being in the army?
That's a good question, that, actually, because in the military, obviously, you're normally working fairly sensible numbers. You don't, you know, in somewhere like Iraq. Equally, you've got air support. You've also got medical cover, all sorts of different air assets, and maybe quick reaction units around local. When you're private security, you're very much normally on your own. We only carry a certain amount of weapons. We don't have tanks. We don't have air support. The military did help us when we was private security at times, but we wasn't always priority. Obviously, they had their own people to take care of. So they did send out, you know, helicopters for medevac if needed and things like that, but it wasn't always a guaranteed. So all the guys on the team, I think about 12 guys on the team, roughly, depending on what job we was doing. Sometimes it might be a little bit more.
How do you know how many people to send on a certain job? Let's say it's a certain caliber of guest, a certain caliber of person, yeah, high in the world, high caliber. Does it, right, it's only going to take one, or do you count maybe two or three on a private protection?
Well, depending on where in the world and what the situation is, really, obviously. Mm. I mean, if you're talking about in London, it just depends on, it depends on so many different things, on who it is, where they're going, what country you might be in. Mm. You know, certainly out in Iraq, the number of vehicles, even just to look after one person, you know, is always like minimum three vehicles, which obviously that all needed manning as well. Whereas in London, you might use two vehicles, you might only use one.
Has anybody ever tried to kill you on the private protection?
Oh, in Iraq, and I mean, I did convoys for a long time in Iraq as well, so you're not actually looking after someone, you're looking after kit and equipment. Mm. And because we were bringing it in from Jordan, Kuwait, you know, surrounding borders of Iraq, if there was a lockdown inside Iraq, it's too dangerous to go out. Our kit still come across the border. If it come across the border without us being there, it gets stolen. So often we was always out, regardless of, you know, any threat or risk level in certainly in Baghdad. We still had to go out. So a lot of guys lost their lives on that job. And we used to get hit often. It was never a case of if, it was always when. Sometimes three or four times a day, guys would get hit on convoys.
What?
Yeah.
And yet it's still managed. Is it a buzz you get doing that to kind of keep in that job, knowing that your life's at risk every day? There must be some sort of adrenaline rush as well.
By the time I'd been on convoys, I'd already been out of the military, and I'd already done 2 years as a bodyguard, if you like, looking after someone out in Baghdad. So I've been around the whole environment for quite a long time. It was a step up in tempo, I'm not going to lie. Mm-hmm. Probably lost a lot of weight just sitting in the truck, because, you know, but you kind of get used to the feeling of shitting yourself, and it just becomes the norm, to be honest.
You just become immune of, like, to your nerves, fear?
Yeah, I didn't think much of it in the end. I mean, you're always conscious it could be you, and obviously mm-hmm. quite often when you'd drive back to wherever it was you were staying, and you'd hear at one of either your camp or one of the other camps, you know, one of the other lads has been killed again today or yesterday, mm-hmm. and it wasn't every day people were getting put, but for a private security contract, the death rate was quite high.
What about Afghanistan?
Afghanistan was different for me. I worked for the Foreign Commonwealth Office. I looked after HMRC officers who were mentoring the Afghan drugs police out there. So because we was looking after life, obviously, there, and it was government life, then the restrictions on us were quite tough when it got rough. We did used to fly up and down the whole of the country, put our vehicles on a C-130 and go out and visit all the city gate checkpoints to make sure the Afghans were searching vehicles for drugs properly and things like that. So it wasn't too bad, to be honest. Certainly, we lived in Kabul, but used to fly Afghan wide. But certainly in Kabul, used to get quite a large number of vehicle-borne IEDs, which I didn't. I was lucky, but a couple of lads got hit by them. We was in armoured cars. They all survived, you know, a bit burnt up, but I didn't find Afghanistan as bad. Again, a lot of lads have lost their lives out there.
What's the armoured cars like? So no bullets can get through?
Yeah, I mean, again, in Iraq, we had B6 armour, I think. I'm not a technical specialist on this, but I know roughly B6 armour, which at the time, sort of like near the top grade of what you're going to get. Range. But even that, you'd only get a certain amount of strike marks on the window before it may go through. You know, it's not 100% bulletproof.
Yeah. So what kind of tools would you have on you in Afghanistan and Iraq compared to UK? Are you allowed any guns or anything in UK?
UK don't carry anything, nah. You just use these,
hands?
Yeah, and it is open hands as well. If you do that, you're in trouble.
What?
Yeah.
Even if somebody's self-defence?
It depends. It's kind of, you can only meet false with false. If someone's holding a gun to my face and I punched him and knocked him out, then that would be all right, because equally, if I don't do that, then he's going to shoot me. So that would be construed as okay. If someone just got a little bit, you know, overzealous, or maybe a little slap when I broke his nose, that wouldn't be all right.
What?
Yeah. So you have to be very careful. And of course, certainly on the celebrity front with that, is paps, hundreds of paps with you all the time, so you can't get it wrong.
Do they try and antagonise, though, for that kind of stuff?
Not really, and then we've been pretty good. Mm-hmm. You do get the odd boisterous one, it can be a nuisance. More so when you're moving on their motorbikes and stuff, they get in the way, and you know. But when they're on foot, not really. No, I never really had any problems with them.
So, you've got the guns and tools in other places, but UK it's just hands?
Yeah, UK hands only, yeah.
Have you got a license to kill in any other countries?
So any place I've carried firearms outside of the UK, I've not needed a license, and that would be purely down to the country at the time saying that we don't need a license to be there.
So if you broke somebody's nose in the UK, you can get done, but if you kill somebody in another country, it's fine?
Yeah, I mean, we wasn't free for all, you know,
yeah, of course.
You know what I mean? But
it's different how it's different laws.
It restricts us with them, but normally, certainly, private security, you're not an attacking force, you're not the military, so you only fire to defend. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the time, if you did fire, you'd already been fired at. You never sort of antagonised ourselves. Mm-hmm. If anything, we didn't want the trouble.
Yeah, it's not paparazzi here.
Yeah, exactly,
do you know what I mean? Over there, you've got fucking guns and grenades.
Yeah, it's the ultimate price is death. Yeah. You're not going home. So, he didn't want it. In fact, if anything, sometimes if you've got ambush, if you just try and drive out of it, you wouldn't even return fire. You just want to get out of it and get away.
Yeah. Did you ever get chased or anything?
Not so much chased. IED'd, yeah. Roadside bomb, yeah. Small arms, yeah. But not really. One of the biggest fears, I think, certainly in Iraq in the early days, was getting dragged from the vehicle. I know, again, a couple of guys from another private security American company, in the early days, they got dragged from their vehicle and paraded through town, and they got hung off a flyover and set on fire.
What?
So, and that actually, when I first went for the job, that was a video. They showed us that just to show you what you was getting into, and if you didn't fancy going out there, then, you know, now's the time to say.
So those videos are real now. You see videos maybe on the news when they've got the knives at their throat and they've got people screaming in the background. That happens?
Yeah, I mean, I say, yeah, I've never been there, luckily. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. They are genuine videos, yeah. Obviously, you don't get to see the worst bit because they cut it off normally. But yeah, I mean, that is how it happens, yeah. There's a lot of people will get taken, and luckily, you know, UK and US... special forces are pretty good at picking these people up now, but unfortunately, you know, sometimes some do get missed.
They ever get taken for ransom or stuff, or they're just getting took to get killed?
So when we was in, that's a funny thing actually. When we was in Iraq, we used to drive past Fallujah. I think it's Muqtada or Sada used to put out on the radio there that it was a $5,000 reward for any Westerner that was caught and taken into Fallujah. So we always had a price on our head anyway for if we were getting caught. One of the main places they would catch you was in the main supply routes, because you was in the middle of a desert, in the middle of nowhere. If they ambushed you and crippled you and you couldn't run anywhere because you're running out into the desert, and that would be a good time, they'd normally drag you across the road and take you away.
That's scary shit, man.
For a few quid.
Yeah. Sign me up for that.
Don't get me wrong, I'm happy with a price on my head, but I thought I was worth a bit more than $5,000.
Is that what it was?
Yeah,
$5,000, miserable bastards, aren't they?
Yeah, it
went. So when going through all that, did you ever struggle? I know a lot of the boys in the army and stuff like that, private protection, struggle with PTSD.
Yeah, I always say no. If you ask people I work with, it might seem different, but no, I've been lucky.
Yeah,
I've been lucky. I'm very good at dealing with separating certain things. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's not just anything in my life what's maybe not gone right for me. I'm very good at separating that, and you know, just putting it to one side. Equally, I do have a few issues from bangs. I can't stomach loud bangs at all now.
Are you on edge?
Yeah, not to the extent. I don't walk around scared every day, but if a car backfires, you'll see me physically jump, probably leave the floor. But equally, it takes me maybe 15 or 20 seconds to properly get over that, whereas you've probably not even thought much of it, you know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's nothing, to be honest with you. If that's what I've got to complain about, you know, I've done it.
Compared to some boys, we do a lot of homeless work, man. It's scary to see so many veterans on the street. It's fucking heartbreaking, that people can get used as a pawn and just put down in the street like a piece of shit and not get the help that they need.
Some guys. I mean, the other thing with it is that people don't... You know, I did, if you include the military, I did 5.5, nearly 6 years. You could argue on operations, you know, in the Middle East, working between Afghanistan and Iraq. That's a long time to be exposed to that sort of work. And some guys have done longer. Some guys have done... In fact, if I looked into it deep enough, there might even be one or two guys what are still doing it now from when I was there, so nearly 20 years. Mm-hmm. But... certainly with the PTSD thing, I think sometimes people don't realise that you can get PTSD in one day.
Yeah, of course.
You know, you don't need to go on a 6-month tour of the army and war fight or whatever, you know, it affects everybody differently. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's a big problem. But No, I don't have. I don't. I get the odd, you know, when I go to sleep and stuff, I get the odd, odd dream of being shot or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it's not to the extent that I ever worry about going to sleep. Yeah. I don't.
Do you think exercise helps you?
The gym for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, over the years, I've had to see different people to talk about different things because the company I used to work for, if you got in any sort of bad trouble, they used to send you to, like, you know, psychiatric, but mm-hmm. I suppose it is that kind of thing. Yeah. Any doctor I've spoken to about anything over the years, they've always said that it's the gym what really keeps me
sane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And certainly my business, it's hectic. You know, but my security company now, it's very, very busy.
What is your security company?
In what respect?
The one you've got.
What the name of it?
Yeah, yeah.
Ascari Secure. Mm-hmm. So we're based in Palace Street down in Victoria, central London.
And that's all private protection?
Yeah, we do 5-star hotels, high-class events, bodyguards, a lot of, you know, close protection work, residential security, asset protection for people in the city and surveillance. Mm-hmm. So we cover a range of services, really. Obviously, at the moment, with what's going on, the hospitality side of it, with the events and the hotels are a little bit quiet, but... Mm-hmm. The rest of it's been fairly solid. I started in 2010, so we've been going a little while now, and it's growing. It's even today, we've actually just picked up quite a big contract with I won't say the name, but it's a film company in the States, which again, although we've kind of got that, we haven't started because of what's going on, but we will do. So we're getting bits and pieces coming in, even through this period of time.
Yeah.
It's been good.
Yeah, it's good, mate. You've got to, like we spoke earlier, you've got to keep your head away. above water, mate. And it's such a fucking weird time, but there's nothing else to do but soldier on.
Yeah, but even when the world's normal, I'm still plugging away.
Yeah, yeah. It's so the only thing you can do, mate, isn't it?
Yeah.
So when you started coming out of Afghanistan, Iraq, and you came out the army and went into the private kind of side of things, was it easier or was it harder when you started getting into private protection?
In
the UK?
In the UK.
Yeah.
So actually, in between there, I missed a little job out in between. When I was actually in Afghanistan, we worked 8 weeks on, 4 weeks off. And it was actually on one of my 4 weeks off when I looked after Michael Jackson. Mm-hmm. I just got back. I was in Edinburgh, actually. I just got back. A friend of mine who was on my rotation lived in Edinburgh, and he said, do you want to come up for a couple of nights out or whatever? And I just got up there. I did one night out, and then someone called me. So did I want to work in London? At the time, I never really worked in London, and I knew that at the end of my Afghanistan stint, some stage I'd end up coming back here to work. So I thought maybe it's a good idea to, you know, jump on and see what it's all about. And they wouldn't tell me who it was, and I just thought, oh, I'll go and do it anyway. So I had to get an early flight down. I think I went out that night, missed my flight in the morning, nearly missed the whole job because of it.
No.
Managed to get the next flight, got down. They had to buy a suit, so I didn't have time to go home and get a suit to go back to Heathrow to pick this guy up. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until we got there that they told us who it was. And then it was just a hectic, massively hectic. I can't remember if it was 7 or 10 days now. But
what was he like, Michael Jackson?
Yeah, he was all right. I mean... It's such a hectic job that it's just.
How many people did he have around him?
It was 5 of us all together. Mm-hmm. You know, he always has 5 or 6. You can't move around. But every time we moved anywhere, we had 4 or 5 cars. But equally, you'd have about 12 taxis following you where fans have paid for the taxi for the whole day. Motorbikes following you. You know, it's just couldn't go anywhere without it. It's been an absolute nightmare of a job, really. I mean, it's a good one in terms of. Prestige, if you like, as a close protection officer, what better person
good
to look
for the
after?
CV, yeah, mate,
exactly,
isn't it?
Yeah. But the job was, you know, it's a tough one, and being my first one in London as well, I really sort of had to dig in on that one.
Did you enjoy that then, realising from being in Iraq, can get blew up, shot, took away and hung, to then follow Michael Jackson? But even though there's not many shootings here for celebrities or the close protection kind of thing, was it still as stressful?
Yeah, if not, probably more stressful. I mean, by that stage anyway, I'd had enough of the shootings.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't care if I ever saw a shooting again. So it was a breath of fresh air. One thing I will say, for your first job, it's almost, in terms of people who could look after you, could argue it's kind of the peak of your career. And I've just done that in my first job.
Yeah.
So, you know, everything after that is a bit of a downer, really.
All the amateur celebrities, aren't they? No matter who it is.
I could have done with that a little bit later on. But, yeah, no, it was good. It, you know, I learned how different it was. And to be fair, the fundamentals of it wasn't much different.
So when you do the close protection for a celebrity, is there a rota? Are you just getting planned to do what he's doing? Or is it all down to yours? Or does Michael Jackson's team call the shots? Or is it the boys?
Yeah, so normally it depends on who they are and what they do. But certainly in their work hours, they've all got agents or managers. So you get a full rundown of where they got to be that day. Mm-hmm. It gets a bit more up to you maybe in the evenings, because after work, any of their sort of support staff, managers, makeup artists, you know, whatever might be around them all the time, they finish when the day's work's done. And then if that person wants to go out of an evening for dinner, that's now my day out, you know, on my own, because they go out and do that and you have to be with them everywhere they go. So the evenings could get hectic, mm-hmm. Which is a bit of a pain because you've already done 12 hours or 13 hours. Yeah.
So for celebrities like him, that's kind of status. If he's got 6 or 10 guards with him every day, round the clock, 24/7, they must spend, what, millions and millions of pounds each year?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously on that particular job, I haven't got a clue what they charge for that. But yeah, it's got to be. And to be fair, everyone what was there, it was needed. I don't think mm-hmm. there was anyone there which wasn't. The Bella Hadid, Kendall Jenner, Rita Ora, I've been with, it's been me, just me. Majority of the jobs you do in London, because we're not cheap, mm-hmm. you know, it's just one guy.
Yeah.
So... yeah, that's the only job actually I've done where I've had more than just me.
Your very first job as
well.
Yeah, yeah.
Again.
What was Kendall Jenner like?
Yeah, she was good. So that's quite a few number of years ago now. I'm trying to think how old she was. I think she was maybe 18 or 19. I didn't know who she was. I don't know who any of these people were. Michael Jackson's probably the only one. I always have to Google people before I start.
Better not fucking tell them that.
I don't watch. Obviously, I've got a bit of social media, but I don't watch TV. I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just a job.
Do you just go in there, blinkers on, just to do the job? It's not as if you can fuck it. It's not like the film The Bodyguard with his name? Kevin Costner. Whitney Houston. He fucking ends up shagging or not?
Yeah, but when you do these jobs, you got to know who you're looking after, so you end up doing a bit of background research anyway. But I never heard of Kendall Jenner till the day I picked off at the airport. Really,
what was Rita Ora like? Rita Ora, she seems
great.
Crazy.
Yeah, she's great. She's been around for a while, hasn't she? But yeah. she's really good. She's good fun. Mm-hmm. I think the last job I did with her, two or three years ago, I went to Milan for Milan Fashion Week. Was out there for a little bit.
Was Conor McGregor no there?
Nah.
That week, nah?
Nah.
So I've seen the two together at a party. I don't know if it was a Milan Fashion Week.
Yeah, no, it was good. But I mean, I haven't done a job for 2 years now.
You're missing it? Why?
I've done 17 years. I forgot a big chunk out somewhere, to be honest with you. I did maritime security as well for just probably on and off for 2 years.
What's that?
So basically, oil tankers and LPG tankers would go down like the Gulf of Aden. And the Red Sea and around there, it used to get...
the pirates?
Yeah, taken over by pirates quite often. So we started going on there. Originally, we went on there, wasn't armed, and there was just a security team on there to sort of guide, you know, help the captain with what to do should we get attacked. And then as that also progressively got worse, so we started carrying firearms on that as well.
What was that like? Did you ever get attacked?
It's fraught with problems. Sometimes you go away on a two-week job, and I think once I'll come back like 8 weeks later... And obviously, when you're at sea as well, your phone doesn't work. It's all a bit of a nuisance.
No signal or nothing?
Yeah, no, not really. Sometimes you can use your ship's email system, but generally you try not to get too involved in what the ship and the captain are doing. But I did transits where we had a couple of Japanese warships taking us down, so we had nothing to do really because we had them there. I've done other ones. I was on a gunboat for that was nearly 8 weeks, and that was probably the worst trip I've ever experienced. However, at the same time, I always remember that trip.
Why?
Just because it was crap.
What was that?
It's awful. You know, the conditions were awful. We was out there a lot longer than we was meant to be. The boat sort of just, you couldn't eat. You had to eat holding the plate because you couldn't, you know, it's just horrendous. Mm-hmm. There's nothing good about it. I'm glad I done it because it was a bit of a test, if you like. And all the lads who were on it, I think it was four of us on that. Yeah. We all still talk about it today, so it must have been something.
How organised are those pirates? Because you see them driving up in their wee wooden boats next to these big tankers and they still manage to go on and take over.
They're not massively organised, but they are good at climbing.
Like little monkeys.
So what you do in a lot of the bigger tankers is you wire it up with barbed wire. So you normally get, depending on where you get on the vessel, you might get 3 days before you start getting into sort of troublesome water. So you spend that time wiring up the whole of the vessel, which again, it's not a great job because it's burning hot out there normally. You're wearing gloves, razor wire, you know, the amount of cuts you get putting that stuff up. And equally, to go into Port Suez in Egypt, you've not had any wire. So you have to take it all down after as well, which again, is another nuisance. But I only did maritime security because it was part of the private security world at the time. And I kind of been ticking all the boxes and, you know, done a bit of everything. And I didn't want to miss out on that, basically. Obviously, we had to do courses and that for that as well, you know, sea survival courses and the ship security officer courses. So I had to go and do all that down in Poole. But that's one of my main reasons why I don't miss it. I've kind of ticked every box.
Completed that?
Yeah, but I'm sure there is one or two other things out there that you could do, but nothing I want to do. I've ticked every box I wanted to do.
Yeah, better relaxation now, better your time.
Yeah, I mean, I've still got the company, obviously, so that, you know, I'm still involved in it to a certain extent. More on the business side now is what I do on that. I'm kind of, most people don't really see me. In fact, a lot of people probably don't even know I'm involved in that business. We've got a lot of guys that work for us, they probably don't even know I'm involved. I'm very much in the office and, you know, the business side of it. But I enjoy that now.
Yeah.
I do like doing that. And obviously with this other stuff I've got going on with the acting magazines and everything else, and it gives me time to do that as well.
Yeah. Busy, man.
Yeah, it is at the moment. Yeah. Half five, wake up, bed at 11, I think, at the moment, 7 days a week.
Fuck that, man.
Yeah.
Fuck that, mate. Yeah. As much as I'm busy, I work cost, mate. I had a wee nap before you came up, mate.
I think it's the only one getting done at the moment.
I had a wee nap, so did Nick. And if I kept, so did I. So see, if somebody was climbing up that boat, if you get the right, can you blast them? Shoot them?
Yeah, once we get on board, once they get on board, we used to carry two types of weapons in the end, with shotguns if they got on board, and then we had like a, I can't even remember what it was, some sort of sniper rifle, but without a scope, I think, when they were further off. Yeah, but I never had to get.
Because I had a boy on, a few of them were on a boat and they had guns, but they all get charged with the guns. So they did a few years ago in India.
Oh, yeah, because they went ashore with them.
Yeah, they get done, man.
Yeah. They're
all done, I think 5 or 6 years in Indian jail, man.
Yeah, that's a big problem, even though they think, I know you're talking about, and I think they had weapon permits,
They fucked them over, man.
They made examples.
Yeah, they end up spending 4 years or something in India.
We kind of had the same problem at Seychelles. We was looking after a survey vessel, but we was on a small gunboat where had all the, because they didn't want the client vessel, they didn't want the weapons and ammunition on their boat.
Yeah.
So we had them on ours, and we went to the Seychelles to bunker, which basically means go and refuel the ship and, you know, supplies and everything else. And they went in first, and we've been on this thing that's been tipping around for days and days and days. We thought, oh great, finally, you know, get to go. And Seychelles, honeymoon destination. And then we had to sit 12 miles out because we had weapons on board. So we anchored up for another 2 weeks at the Seychelles and couldn't go ashore.
Yeah. Would you never do the SAS or anything like that when you were coming out of the army? Would you never do the training for that 20 years ago?
Oh, yeah, I mean, that would have been my progression. When I left after Iraq, I got the opportunity to go to stay on with the army and go to a unit. Which was along those lines, and I'd just been offered a job in London to work back in Iraq. And at the time, you know, it was on like 10 grand a month or something. I can't remember what I got paid in the army now, but it was like 2 maybe, I don't know. And obviously the money, it won me over.
As you've always done it.
Yeah, and actually when I finished with the military, I kind of had a bit of a deal that I was going to do a 2-year leave of absence, go and do the private security work, buy a house, because the money was obviously quite good back then, and then go back to the army, because I still have only been 25, 26 years old when I'd gone back to the army. And I love the army. I had no other reason to finish doing it. You know, I'd loads of different things mapped out I wanted to do within it. It just all come to an end. I think when I started the private security job in Iraq, it just went on, you know, one thing to another. And I did 3 years there in Afghanistan and so on and so on. I was like, no, I'm not going back to the army now. Yeah. It's done.
How'd you get into the acting then? Because you've been in like Sherlock Holmes, you've been a stunt double for, is it Batista?
Dave Batista, yeah.
Yeah, the wrestler?
He's a big lump, no. Twice the size of me. I don't know if you know how I got that, but...
yeah, he's about fucking 22.
I had to wear his costume, and it was like his shoulders on it were down by my elbows. So when I was in Iraq, private security, there was a guy there, a lot older than me, and he used to run the army where all the weapons were kept on our place. And he was the security advisor for the film Troy. And I was just talking to him one day, and he mentioned about that. And I thought, oh, film work, that sounds interesting. And I just asked him a bit more about it. And he gave me a number, a mobile number of someone to call. in London, wrote it down on the card. I put it in a day sack in my room and left it. Obviously, that was like 2006. I then did the time in Afghanistan after that. I then come back to London. I did various jobs in London. And then around 2010, in fact, the first job I had in London, there was a house provided with it for the whole of the security team. It wasn't just for me, but, you know, all the lads who were on that security team could use the house. So that's when I moved up into London. At the end of that, when that job finished, I started my business up about the same time that job finished. I thought, well, I need to get an apartment somewhere around here because I'm staying up in London now. I got a flat share at the time with someone else who was in the industry. I remember when I was unpacking my kit, that card dropped out my bag, and I thought, oh, I forgot about that. And I looked at it and I thought, actually, I'm even living in London now as well. And this place was in Shepherd's Bush. Mm-hmm. So I thought, I'll give them a call. So the next day I called them up and they said, you know, they send me a link, something on an email. Like 25 pages of stuff to fill out and everything else. There was another lad with me, he wanted to do it as well. He sent me that. There's all sorts of stuff on there, and I thought, well, if I don't do it, I'm not going to get a look in at, you know, doing anything with film. So I filled it all out. The other guy decided he didn't want to do it because it's too much like hard work, so he'd give it a rest. And then I did the whole lot, and then they replied to me saying that they got it, but this was like maybe September time of 2010, I think. And they said that we're not, thanks for everything, but we're not taking them until August next year. So I thought, that's a bit of a pain. But then I thought, well, I've set the seed now, you know, it's there. So come August next year, I'll just forget about it now until it comes around. And I was in the gym back in the days where I could leave my phone in a locker when I was trying, I can't do it anymore.
Why?
Too many people want after me all the time. I always want something, so I can't.
Do they?
I can't, yeah, yeah. Or if I get a job in and it's got to be done, mm-hmm. I can't like answer it 3 hours later, mm-hmm. something. I remember going back to my locker and I had a voicemail, and there's a guy on there. He said, hi, my name's Chuck. I was wondering if you'd be available to fly out to Morocco on Monday to take part in the Green Zone film with Matt Damon. I thought, I should wind up, because they told me August, and a few of the lads of this job I was on as well, they knew I'd done it, so I thought someone's winding me up. So I thought, oh, I don't know, and I looked at it, I listened to it again. This is before iPhone as well, we're going back to an old Nokia or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I think I googled the number and it came up in Shepherd's Bush. I thought, oh mate, I think this is it. Yeah. This is the one.
The paranoia kicking in.
Yeah, because you know what lads are like. Yeah. Get all excited, guess where I'm going. Like, no, you're not. So yeah, I got that and I rang him up and he said, yeah, it's legit, could I fly Monday? I still had one day left on the job that I was on. I actually finished on the Tuesday. So I said to one of the lads, look, I've got like, I think it's like 2 months or 6 or 8 weeks in Morocco. I don't want to lose it just because of one day on this job. Can you cover me? And he said, yeah. And I literally just flew straight out to Morocco on that Monday. And then, yeah, I think it's 6 or 8 weeks I was gone for doing that. And that's like my first ever film.
Mm-hmm. How was Matt Damon?
Yeah, he was good. He wasn't there for the whole thing. He come on and off throughout the time there. But yeah. I mean, they're all, Jason Isaacs was in as well. He's good. Paul Greengrass was director. Mm-hmm. It's good fun. But one of the things I liked about it was when we was doing a lot of the scenes, you're running around shooting and no one was shooting back.
Yeah,
it was exactly like it was in Iraq, mm-hmm. but just without the hassle of, you know, the worry of it all.
Yeah. So your first fucking close protection, you were with Michael Jackson, and the first film set, you were with Matt Damon.
I know, and I didn't really plan it.
Where like else that. Do you go after that? Do you know what I mean? Every other film set, you'll be thinking, shite actors.
I don't. Yeah, my expectations are high.
What an actor he is.
Yeah, he's great.
And they done good. Well, Hunting Man was unbelievable. I mean, is it Ben Affleck?
Yeah.
Unbelievable film.
Yeah, I mean, he's done some great ones. He did all the Bourne series, but really, really good. Mm-hmm. And Sherlock come along as well.
Was that Guy Ritchie directed in that one?
Yeah, Guy Ritchie, yeah. That was, I actually missed a little bit of that. I doing too many things at once.
Yeah.
I did a load of filming down at Chatham Dockyard. And then there was a gap of maybe 3 weeks, or might have been a little bit longer than that, 4 or 5 weeks. Because of the continuity, you can't just bin it halfway through. Mm-hmm. And I went away on ship, did maritime security, which is only maybe a 10-day job, and I got stuck on it. So I didn't turn up. I didn't turn up for the next part of the film. Mm-hmm. And then I come on again at the end. Yeah.
Shit, man. Fucking goddamn shit.
Sorry.
How was it Jude Law that was in that?
Yeah, yeah. Robert Downey Jr. and Jude Law, yeah. Yeah.
What a story he's got.
Yeah.
So he has.
Yeah, he's a character, he is.
From Bang On The Gear, because he was a heavy actor when he was younger.
Yeah.
And then he fucked it. Yeah. And then he's pulled it back again. It'd be one of the biggest, highest grossing earners in.
Yeah, I mean, always people, Guy Ritchie as well, you know, he's so good.
What a story he's got so as well, Guy Ritchie,
yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Is it A Gentleman?
Yeah, his latest one, yeah.
Is that a cracking film?
Yeah.
Cracking film?
Yeah, he's done some good ones.
So we'll see when you're in with all these big guns, do you try and network as well? Try and get an in without harassing them?
Yeah, I mean, because there's a fine line of networking.
Yeah, and being a pain in the ass,
I'm quite lucky that I always, anything I do, wherever I go, I always, providing I've got the time, if you're only on a job for one day, just keep your mouth shut, do the job, go home, because you're not going to achieve getting in with someone, in, mm-hmm. you know, so, but when I'm on anything over any significant amount of time, quite often I look a bit different to what the other people do there, which obviously straight away, it allows me to stand out slightly. Mm-hmm. Just do as you're told. That's the biggest thing, do as you're told. So many people don't.
Yeah.
If you do as you're told, you stand out in an instant anyway. I learned that quite quickly, and mm-hmm. actually in the end I ended up with some quite good parts just because I did as I was told.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do. I'll tell you why I network a lot actually on Instagram. That seems to get me. There's a couple of directors, one in LA at the moment who was doing a film this year. It's been put back now. And actually he offered me a couple of parts in that, and that was, I think it's going to be, I can't remember his name. Lawrence Fishburne was
who's that?
He's been in lots of different. So I'm trying to think what films he's been in. I'm terrible with films. If I showed you a picture, you'd know.
Yeah.
The previous film he'd done was Lawrence Fishburne, Nicolas Cage. Mm-hmm. So I mean, he's knocked out he's knocked out some good films. And then there's another guy here who's I'm hoping to have a meeting with him in December. I don't really meet these people to get work as such. I meet them to get an understanding, because all actors will mm-hmm. have been actors as well.
Yeah.
Get an understanding of what, you know, what things I mm-hmm. can expect to do and not to do. And they've all been very helpful so far.
Did you do acting classes or anything?
So, no.
Just kamikaze?
I've done a few short films and stuff like that just to mm-hmm. get a bit of time in, really. Yeah. But equally, I've got an acting diploma to do actually in 2 weeks' time, which is a month at Pinewood. To start with, and then we'll see what happens after that.
Is that like an intense course?
Yeah, very.
Yeah, but you'll be used to that shit.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm not.
Isn't it crazy? You'll probably be used to fucking standing in a rack, trying to get fucking your head blown off, but then you go into an acting class and you shit yourself.
I think I got an email from today and said, "Can you make sure you watch When Harry Met Sally before you turn up?" Uh-huh.
So I love them.
That's going to be the hardest bit of the whole course. I think watch that. But I mean, I'll do it if it's Harry kills uh-huh. Sally. I'm more likely to be in it.
So how through your life going through for the British Army, close protection, starting your own business? What's your life like in a daily routine? What's your up at 5 a.m. you says, so what do you do?
Yeah, at the moment it's a little bit different because I've obviously lost a lot of time over this lockdown period and stuff. So. Mm-hmm. I've got two fitness shoots in November, which is almost, it's a week after the acting diploma, so I've got about another inch to lose on my waist at the moment, which I'll do by then easily, but I've got to try and keep that up over the period I'm doing the acting. Mm-hmm. So at the moment it's been pretty brutal. I've been doing gym at 5:30 in the morning for an hour, then home, breakfast, shower, change, keep my kit together, and I go to the gym again for 9 to do weights from 9 to 10:30, and it's straight to the office from that gym. Office till 5, straight back home, back to the gym for an hour again, doing cardio again.
What?
Yeah, and then home by 8:30, call the girlfriend, go to sleep.
Fuck, see, I do a jog in the morning and I think I've done a ton.
Yeah, but on top of that as well, I eat 6 to 8 times a day, so all my food.
Calories, 4,000, 5,000 calories a day, you on?
All I do is no carbs Monday to Friday, even carbs at weekends. So by today and tomorrow, I'm hanging out.
That's fucking discipline to the highest level. So no breads, no pastas, no nothing.
No, I don't eat anything. Like, do you know what? Once I'm doing it.
So how's your energy levels then?
Low.
Yeah.
But I've been doing it for so long now. I've probably mm-hmm. first started, I was quite a late dieter. I probably started dieting properly when I was 36. So last year I did men's fitness and a magazine called Train as well. So GQ, in fact, I did fitness in GQ. Vogue, which is how it's kind of started for me back in mm-hmm. 2006 when I used to look after Bella Hadid Vogue picked me up as a real style star of London Fashion Week. And they reported on me quite often when I was with these models just because of what I wear, which is nothing exceptional, by the way. It's just maybe
I've seen your
checks
on Instagram, mate.
No,
you look smart as fuck.
So that's how it kind of started, and more people are getting interested. On top of that, I branded Jason Statham all the time. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's a lot worse people to be branded as. I'm not moaning too much, but that is always coming up in articles. I had done film work and I had been around the film. You know, I've done a couple of adverts and obviously doubling for Dave as well. So I've kind of been around the film side of it. I get stopped in the street some days, particularly at the moment because I'm a bit leaner. And people go, excuse me. You turn around, they're like, oh, I think they realise. And they're a little bit dishevelled afterwards. You know exactly what you're going to say. And so, no, it's not him. It's not him. So I get sort of branded with that slightly. And people have said over the years, you look like someone who should be in a film, you look like someone who should be in a film. And I think that's kind of spurred me on, because I do enjoy doing that. So that's what's kind of spurred me on to maybe push that side of it more. And obviously some of the opportunities I've had already with being in films, if there's a small chink in the armour, I like to expose it.
Yeah. But you're perfect for kind of Guy Ritchie films. I don't know how your acting is, but what kind of film would you like to...
Yeah, I mean, everything I've done, I mean, I've been a prison inmate before, I've been a prison officer before, military, you know, I've been in a couple of gangster things, one American one. It's always that. Bodyguard, I think I've been a couple of times in a few couple of BBC things.
Do you not mind being tarred with that brush, or do you kind of want to try something different? Push the boat a bit?
I'm not 3 years at acting school. So for me to be a bodyguard on screen
perfect for you.
It's easy, yeah. All I'm really doing at the moment, and certainly for this acting diploma, is working on my dialogue and you know, making sure that that side of what I do is right. But in terms of the actual acting itself, most of the stuff I get, it's just not acting for me.
Just normal?
It's pretty normal.
Yeah.
You know, all the weapons handling, the running around, jumping, shooting. You know, quite often on film sets, in fact, I've actually helped directors where to stand, because all I do is first start off just standing by where I would stand. And normally that's good enough for them. So it's a lot for me to be able to put back in doing those type of movies.
How's the models and stuff to work with? Are they a pain in the ass, or are they okay?
They work hard for youngins. They work really hard. They do a lot of hours. They're great, to be honest.
Are they?
Yeah, I've never had a problem with anyone I've looked after. Yeah. At the end of the day, I don't have to look after anyone.
Yeah.
So if I think someone's going to be a nuisance, or I do a day with someone, I think, oh, I'm not putting up with this. I mean, and I'll just, that's not...
You've worked with my boy Dizzy Rascal, who's an absolute legend. Love Dizzy, so shout out to Dizzy.
Dizzy's always great as well, because he's so easy to work with, and he's just such a nice guy.
So laid back, man. Yeah. But his work ethic's second to none. 20 years in the industry and he's still kicking on.
He works at it. Yeah, he works.
So he's got a new album coming out, which we'll actually plug. October, I think it's out the 9th or the 13th of October.
Yeah,
so,
I've seen that come up on Instagram,
20 years later, man, he's still producing.
Yeah, no, he's great. And he's got a good team around him as well. They're all well suited. They're all very nice.
I don't think he would fuck about with any edits. He's, even when the interviews, even though I loved interviewing him, but you can tell it wouldn't take any shit.
No.
Do you know what I mean? He's obviously been in the industry too long. He knows
he knows exactly what he should be getting. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I'm third in line on that job. So there's a good friend of mine who I still do a little bit. I must say, I haven't done anything for a while, certainly this year, but I've got two really good friends who look after people pretty much full time. Who are both celebrities, and because of that, celebrities are a bit of a creature habit and they like the same people.
Trust them.
So often, although those guys are full time, there is one or two others that jump on those people, if you like, and obviously sometimes I do it. And the only reason why I still do it now really is to help them out, to be honest.
Yeah. So you get a phone call for the business and it was a mega star. You go, fuck it, I'm going to take that job.
Yeah. No. If it's taken so Dizzy and Halsey.
Yeah.
Of the two, I still jump on every now and then if needed, because they're both friends of mine. It's their job, so yeah. I still do it. But outside of that, no. I mean, certainly this film contract we just got with my security company now, that will require, you know, a number of A-list celebrities over the next couple of years looking after. I won't get involved.
Yeah.
The more I do with this stuff as well, the more I do in films, if the filming takes off for me, you know, in the way that I want it to, I can't be walking down the road next to someone who maybe isn't known, and people start coming up to me, you know, I'm going to be looking after the guy or the woman. Yeah, it's just not going to work. So
yeah, so if you're getting,
that's why I've taken a sidestep now.
A few big films, and before you know it, people are coming up and asking for your picture instead of
embarrassing
the celebrity.
When you're trying to look after someone. Yeah. So no, that's why I've taken a sidestep now from doing that, and I don't. I'm glad I've done that, because I've exhausted the private security industry for all that time. It's changed a lot. It's not something I particularly enjoy as much as I used to now. But equally, I can't, you know, it's made me a small fortune, to be honest with you, over the years, all different things I've done. And I've been around the world as well. I've been in so many different countries, like 65 different countries, probably.
Private planes?
Yeah, on some occasions, yeah. Boats, planes. It's all, everything's paid for, obviously. So I've had a good run. You know, I've got nothing bad to say about it at all, really. It's not for me anymore, but I've got nothing bad to say about it.
Yeah, you've completed that?
Yeah, yeah. No, it's been, looking back, I mean, to be honest with you, looking back, I was surprised how much I have done. You forget. Just get on with it and do it, don't you?
It's weird, isn't it, when you actually do the life, and people looking from the outside, they think, oh, that's a great life, but nothing really fucking changes, doesn't it? No. It's your mind. Like, I was talking to, I don't know who I had on the show. Oh, I was talking to Pablo Escobar's son's PR today, and he was saying, yeah, I was like, what's it like? What was that? It doesn't feel anything. The same as people tell me how well I'm doing, it doesn't feel. I just do it.
Yeah,
it just feels fucking normal. So even you working with the top celebrities and shit, even though it's still good talking about it, but for you it's kind of, fuck it, innit?
Yeah, it's another day at work, isn't it, really?
Would you ever write a book?
We've touched on that at the moment. I could do. There's enough there. One of my problems with it at the moment is, the reason why we've held back slightly on it is, one, because of time. I like physically can't really do much more at the moment.
Yeah.
6 hours sleep, so I just want to start eating into that. But two, I feel that at the moment I'm kind of tinkering on something new, you know, with the acting thing. Do I do a book on the private security thing, which I don't really want to particularly do, because there's so many books out there now of army and out in Iraq and Afghanistan and shoot 'em up books and that, which are a great read, don't get me wrong, but I don't really want to go into that category. I think if I did a book now, I'd like to maybe try and achieve something over the next 5 or 10 years in the acting world, and do it more as a life book.
An inspiration,
all the,
kind
all the
of
different
thing.
Things that I've been through, and hopefully, you know, I'll still hopefully be a business owner as well as being maybe an established actor if I'm lucky, you know, blah blah blah, rather than being a, you know, bodyguard out in Iraq.
The same kind of story.
There's a lot of it out there.
Yeah.
You know, I don't really, there's a lot of stuff we did out there, you know, and I'm sure it's interesting to a lot of people. For me, it's, again, that was a great job, but sometimes things are better left.
Left in the past. How does it feel for you to talk about stuff in the past? Because even though, like you say, you can block it out and train hard, but even though all the emotion and shit, you've still seen a lot of nasty shit. Does it, do you get drained or anything thinking about it or talking about it?
I don't really talk about it that much, and for a simple reason, if you're talking about it to someone who doesn't know about it, it can sound like you're bloating, because some of it can be a bit far-fetched, what you can get involved in. So if someone's generally interested because they've got an interest in the Middle East and they know maybe other soldiers or private security, you know, I might touch on certain bits. I never really go into real big detail, because sometimes it just sounds like you're big time in it all the time. Yeah. You know, going over the top of it, and you just, you know, there's a couple of things I've done in the past, and I just don't tell anyone, because I think no one's ever going to believe that.
Yeah.
It's just no, you know, so... I don't really. If people are interested and they ask me about it, I'm happy. It's not a secret by any stretch of imagination, not a secret, but... It's just, it is what it is, isn't it? It's just another part of what I've done. You know, I don't really see it as a...
Because you've loved that.
Yeah, and there's hundreds of guys who've been private security contracts. There's not the only one. You know what I mean, there's lots of guys who are in the military in Iraq and Afghanistan, Falklands, if you want to go back that way, you know.
Yeah.
It's not... I'm not unique. So I don't like to come across that because I'm certainly not.
Are
mean?
You still in contact with a few of the boys from 20 years ago?
Yeah, very few. I mean, a lot of them, some of them stayed in a lot longer, but most majority now. In fact, I've only got one friend who's still in the army, and he wasn't in with me, but he joined up about a year before me. He's actually, I think he's a captain now. He started off as a soldier, so he's done really well. But majority of the guys. I mean, it's a different thing now. Like I remember Iraq with the military. It's been amazing. If I went back to one of them countries now, would be a totally different thing, different people, different, you know, set up. It's always, things are never the same when you go back Yeah. You can even do it on holiday. You go on holiday, you have an amazing holiday because you're with the right people. Mm-hmm. You go back there next year, maybe with a different set of people or something's changed and it's shit. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So, but you remember that time you went before. So I don't ever wish I could have times again unless it could be the same. Exactly. And obviously things can't.
Yeah, of course.
Things moves on. Yeah. So
things are always going to be
once
different.
Once I've done it, I've done it. Yeah. That's the way I look at it.
Where's the best place you've ever been in the world?
I don't get wowed over with places that much, if I'm honest. I don't really like to go back to the same place twice. My girlfriend lives in Canada, in Toronto, so that's obviously a place that I end up going a lot because she's there. Mm-hmm. But if I can, I like to... I mean, you probably see by my career, I get bored easily. I have to move on and do something more and more and more and different. So it's the same when I go, why spend $4,000 or $5,000 on holiday or whatever and go back to the same hotel and sleep in the same bed and eat the same lobster by the same pool with the same annoying people where we were there last year. There's how many other countries I haven't been to.
Yeah.
So I like to try and change every time. But I'll probably say up with it for a holiday, probably Maldives or Thailand.
Is it nice in Maldives? I've always looked at it, but I don't know if I'd be too bored there.
The thing with it is it's nice. Don't do too long. It's boring.
Yeah, I thought.
But equally, I think in like 6 years, it'll be underwater.
Well, that
because of the sea's rising. Obviously, they're all small islands. So if you don't get it in soon, it's going to make your mind up for you anyway, and you won't be going.
So I always fancied like the Himalayas or Tibet, something quite. Vietnam, something. I don't know, man. I've always kind of looked at those places.
I'm not very good at. Bearing in mind my background, I'm not really good at roughing it anymore.
I'm just luxury five, six, and seven star.
I can't stomach it these days. I mean, obviously, you do what you got to do, and I could if I had to, but you know, given the choice, I'm more of a hotel man. And
would you ever do like, any of the SAS shows?
Well, I actually written a show, went out to various production companies in the UK and States as well. I think it went to National History Channel, Discovery Channel, and National Geographic out there, and a number of production companies here, which is kind of, it's basically a bodyguard show to see if you had what it took to be a professional bodyguard. It got knocked back. The reason why it got knocked back is because they tried doing it before at Middleton. They were going to try to do something at Middleton. Mm-hmm. And for some reason, it didn't get picked up. So at the moment, it's being shelved. I have had two companies interested in me repitching it in 18 months. So I haven't given up hope on it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, if I was to get someone to take that on, then you know I'd be involved in that myself. I should imagine. Yeah. So I would. Yeah.
The bigger your stock becomes, and the more acting jobs, then people just want to work with you anyway. So it's just about keeping, because I've got things in the back burner that I know are going to be mega.
Yeah, yeah.
But if I'd promoted them 2 years ago or published them 2 years ago, I'd try to network with them. People would have said, nah, but now I'm growing a platform. So any idea or any vision I have, people are kind of, I want to work with him. It becomes easier. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
Even though the ideas, are golden.
Yeah.
Because my stuff's getting watched. The stuff I produced 2 years ago, the documentaries are still getting watched to this day because the more traffic goes towards it, they go, fuck me, that's amazing. But. Yeah. It's just all about, it's constant networking, constant hustle.
That's why I've got a good, I think you've spoken to already, my PR.
Yeah.
She's great. And that's why we push the PR so much because it's helped me even get a better acting parts because I'm more known to people now.
It's business.
So yeah, it's great. I've actually got a fashion label as well, which I've done nothing with yet. But again, if my exposure does get bigger and bigger, it's too early now. But, I've got a number of things in the pipeline, which, like you just said, sit on them for now and use them at the right time.
But sometimes I want everything done yesterday.
Yeah, but you can ruin it, can't you?
Yeah,
if you go too early, you've got to hold back.
Fuck. Do you know what I mean?
Hold back.
It's just all about, you're clearly head screwed on. You've clearly got Vision Clothing Brands, own protection company. You're fucking flying, doing the acting. There's just so much, man, and I always believe everything's limitless. It's all down to the individual,
everything
how far
I
they
do,
want to take it.
I have
it.
To do the best, or try to do the best, and even if it's not the best of that, it's the best I can do at least. Mm-hmm. And I've always been, I've always been like that, and I don't always, I'm a bit of a slow grower with a lot of things like that, and I'm not, like my security company, I've had it 10 years now, maybe I'm sure people have started a security company and got to where I am now in 5 years. But I always get there.
Yeah.
It doesn't get, it doesn't, get binned. I always get there. Even if it takes me longer or get knocked back, I always get there in the end. And I'm aware some things take me longer than other people, but I don't care because I always get there. I would.
But they tend to see the ones who grow up faster as the ones who burn out quicker.
Yeah.
So it is, because consistency, everything's just about pushing the boundaries and baby steps. As long as you're pushing it inch by inch every day, then nothing else matters. So it doesn't matter if it's 10 years, 20 years, but it's easy to make it. It's fucking hard to maintain.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter if somebody... Yeah.
And that's the other thing, the foundations have got to be good. Yeah. Because like, you should be a flash in the pan otherwise.
1,000,000%. That's a waste of time. Yeah, yeah. So. This is why my foot's on the floor, because if I quit, there's thousands of other people out there doing podcasts.
Yeah, yeah.
I want to be the elite, not just UK, but worldwide.
Yeah,
and I'm
going to,
and I'm bang on course to
do it. That's the thing, isn't it? Worldwide, international.
Yeah, because people say, when I started off in Glasgow, because my accent's different from where I used to speak 2 or 3 years ago. I had to quiet it down, but slow it down, speak a bit more properly. Just to hit people going, he's fucking talking differently. I just wanted to hit a different audience, wider audience, London, Manchester, Liverpool.
Don't want
to be one dimensional. And everything, listen, I'll complete the fucking world stage, mate. And if I need to get a fucking rocket to the moon and interview aliens, I'll do it, just to take it to a different fucking level.
The thing is, everything I've done and I've noticed that if you keep plugging away, regardless, something will give in the end.
Yeah.
You know, anyone I know who doesn't get on with something, because they don't really give it a chance, you just keep smashing away, put the hours in, keep smashing away at it. And then in the end, it'll pop. And the amount of people, you know, people look at me and see some of the stuff I've done, and they see it as, I don't know, I've rung up Michael Jackson's manager and said, can I look after him tomorrow? And I've just rung up, you know, a film company and said, and they've just put me in a film. So it's not, none of it's been like that. It's all been engineered right from the very early days of me meeting people. And you know, the day I spoke to the guy in the armory about working on films, there was another 6 guys there with me. Well, no one else asked for a card with the number on it.
I think it's how you present yourself as well. Do you believe in like manifestation, the law of attraction?
Yeah.
Like visualising and you are what you think and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing I get as well, certainly when it's come to the bodyguard side of things, I look like what people think a bodyguard should look like.
Yeah.
And that's helped me, obviously. I mean, I know it has. You still got to be good, otherwise you're going to get booed off the job, do you know what I mean? But people do have a perception of what a bodyguard may look like, maybe because of the films or whatever, you know, and often they're a lot taller than I am as well, they think they're going to get.
But you're suited and booted, Hermes belt on, top of the range, fucking the kettle on the wrist.
Yeah.
So you do, you look the part, but again, you've got to promote yourself, because you're thinking, if they're getting papped here, and if I'm looking in a fucking three-piece suit, that's the way I'd be thinking, looking this fucking
bomb.
Yeah,
well, no one wants any photograph looking shit,
so some celebrity will be going, do you know what, fuck that fat guy at 6'8",
right.
I want this fucking guy from London.
And that's the thing, it's making a difference, isn't it? Yeah. If you're, you know, your skills and your ability might be as good as the other guy, but if you can pull something that he hasn't got, then great. But I'll be honest with you, I never did it for that. You know, I've always dressed like that.
Yeah.
When I went to work, I wore what I would have worn whether Bella or Kendall or anyone else was in or not. You know, I didn't like have a particular set of kit just for fun of paps.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so, and sometimes people think, I think I did, you know, I think I used to just dress up for these things, but it's just my normal clothes. Yeah. You know, it wasn't really making an effort. So.
But look where the jobs it's got you, the modelling, the front page of magazines.
Yeah,
that's business.
I've done something like, 25-30 magazines.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've got New York Post coming out this Sunday, which is a print edition. Once I've done this next lot of fitness shoots in November, we're looking to try and do a front cover next year. That's something I haven't done. I'm going to be a little bit careful with the fitness stuff. I don't want to be known as a fitness person, because how many hats have I got? You know, I can't do everything. So I'd like to do a front cover, and then I'm probably going to ease up on the fitness. I've got quite a lot of fitness stuff out there at the moment.
Does that mean when you can ease up on that, your eating can ease up, eat more carbs?
I can eat like a normal person. Yeah, no, I can. But equally, you know, I've got this acting diploma in a couple of weeks. I've got to do a show reel at the end of it to give, you know, send out to different directors and producers. Yeah. So I can't be fat in that, you know. And the thing is, you never know when you... I got called for a photo shoot the other week. That's for New York Post, actually. I sent a photographer out. And if I'm not somewhere near where I am now, I never know when I'm going to get a call. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to be very careful now, because obviously this has taken off a lot more now than what it has done previously for me. So more so than ever now, I've got to be careful. I don't know what... Imagine they see my showroom and I look like this, and then they want to cast me for a part in the new Bond film and I'm 20 stone heavier. Mm-hmm. You know, I've lost the part, so I've got
to... So you need to keep on your A-game.
Yeah, to stay on it, yeah. I haven't got to be as lean as I'm going to be for the shoot. I can come back a little bit, but I can't get, you know.
Before you do a shoot, what's your cut like? Do you drop your carbs? Do you drop your calories?
I can't drop that any more than I am at the moment, to be honest with you.
You must be fucking drained, no carbs for 5 days, not even a bit of sweet potato or nothing.
The biggest thing is you don't sleep. It's because you're not, carbs make you tired, obviously, so yeah. I don't really sleep that much, so I really have to force it. And I do get 6 hours sleep a night, but when you're training, obviously your muscles really grow when you're asleep. So ideal sleep for bodybuilders, 12 hours, which I haven't got time for that.
12 hours?
So if you had a good one, that'd fucking be, you know, a lot of a nap in the afternoon, a lot of them.
I like a nap in the afternoon.
I haven't got time for that, unless I fall asleep in the office, but, you know, which has been known, but involuntary. But it works for me. I'll get where I am. I'm a 30, just under a 34 waist now. I'll probably go down to a 30, or the lowest I've been is a 28.
And what do you know about 15 stone?
I don't know. In kilos, I'm 95.
Yeah. Fucking big unit, but...
Yeah, so I mean...
Do you box or anything?
No, I've never done any martial arts. I've never really... For martial arts, boxing, MMA, and all that stuff... It's great as a sport. It's a great discipline. It's great to keep fit. Mm-hmm. It's a little bit of a illusion that because you're a good boxer, you're going to be a good bodyguard. Mm-hmm. It hasn't massively got a place in the industry, those things.
So what's the difference then from when you're bodyguarding through, do you know the techniques, like, is it grappling or whatever, grabbing
people? Yeah, I mean,
people?
Look, most of the stuff, certainly in...
Self-defence.
Certainly in London, everything's... 9 times out of 10, if I can see a situation occurring with someone I'm with, I'll move the person I'm looking after. I won't even touch anyone else. I'll say, come on, let's go, you know, just get away from it, create a bit of distance. If it, obviously on the odd occasion, maybe you get someone, you know, tries to grab, then you've only got to grab their hand, you've only got to push them away. One good hard shove, it can create a metre, maybe more, depending on the size of them, which is enough. If you're moving the other way as well, you've just created 2 metres in less than a second. Mm-hmm. That's enough to get away and not, you know, when these things happen as well, you're not in the middle of nowhere. There's always other hundreds of other people around you normally get involved. And, do you know what I mean? So I've never really needed to be, you know, quadruple black belt, double backflip kick and all that.
Yeah, yeah, Bruce Lee style.
Yeah, I just not needed it. And to be fair, I ain't got time. Can't do everything. I haven't got the time. And to do that, you know, the guys I do know who do that, they're very good at it, but they've got a passion for it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, they love doing it. They're instructors in it, and they've been doing it since they were a child. I haven't, you know, and I've got to do a limited amount of fighting for film work, but it's all pub rule stuff, really. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to be doing a Bruce Lee film.
Yeah. So through it, you've got all your visions for the future, but what do you want to do? Is it mainly the acting stuff? To get into films and...
Yeah, as time goes on, I'd like to push that, because if I don't get a decent slot in something there, I won't feel like I've ticked the book, you know, I've done it. Mm-hmm. So I will make that happen. I'll have to, even if I'm 75 and I get in something, you know, I'll make that bit happen. How much further I go on... Once I've done something, I don't lose interest, but if I don't see that there's a next stage to go on with it, I'll bin it.
Yeah.
If I think I've done all I can do with it, I'll bin it. So... There's a lot I can do with acting, obviously, so it should last a while, but equally, I think, in the long run, what I'll probably do is end up directing.
Think so?
Yeah, that's where I think I would like to go to. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just writing this TV show lately as well, and sending it to... You know, I got some really good feedback on that as well, written, and the context as well. And I didn't do that much revision to sort of look to see how to write one. I've never written one before. I just typed it out, but I have a good idea and a vision of what things should be and how storyline, you know, I don't know if I'd be a writer or just a director or both, I don't know, but I'd maybe, when we're talking, I don't know.
So, yeah, but it's exciting that you've got these visions that you think, right, I'm going to get a major part, that I'm going to write my own film, my own show. It's brilliant, because I come with visions now. I'm at the stage, I was very good with coming up with ideas and having to tell anybody I needed approval, but now it's a case of, you know what, I've got this idea, I know this is going to work.
Yeah.
There's no cunt going to stop me to what I'm going to do.
I never ask for opinions anymore, let's do it, yeah.
It's good that the fact that you've been front line on the private security to then sitting in the office, and now you want to go front line in acting and then maybe
I don't
directing.
See the point in doing it. If you're just going to mess around and be the same as everyone else, then anyone can do that. Mm-hmm. I don't really...
Yeah,
you know, I've wasted my time doing it, and I need to make a difference.
Where can people get a hold of your social media? What's all your social media platforms?
So I'm not a big user of Facebook. I keep getting told that's an old person's thing these days. I don't know how true, that is. And all my nephews and that, they've all only got Instagram these days. But my Instagram's at simon.newton, so it's quite simple. But yeah, that's actually all I use. I don't use Twitter. I don't have YouTube.
Yeah,
And I've got a website as well, which is simonnewtonlondon.com, which we've just changed now and put a video page on there because, you know, stuff like this now I've been doing.
Yeah. where can people, if people need a wee bit of protection, because I've got a lot of fucking guys on this show that probably need a bit of backup sometimes. How do they get a hold of
you? So you can go to simonnewtonlondon.com and in the contact page there's my company. It says how to get to the security inquiries, but equally ascarisecure.com is where you'll find the company. Obviously, you can just get us through there, and the phone's manned 24 hours a day.
Yeah. For anybody that's maybe struggling or Simon, maybe battling PTSD or want to, maybe mental health kind of side of things, what advice would you give them for a man who's been through it himself, seen a lot of shit, and still plugging away and has got big plans for the future? You clearly got your head screwed on your shoulders. You clearly know yourself that you can slip into bad habits. But for anybody watching, what would you kind of say to them?
Speak out. It's always the biggest one of anything PTSD. Mm-hmm. If you see anyone say do anything, it's always speak out. And even on my Facebook now, there's lots of ex-military guys in there. Some of them I don't even know. And I reckon once a week I get another regimental badge come up with RIP so-and-so because he's gone and taken his own life, or she has. And every time that person's not said anything, no one's been aware that that's going to happen. So I'm one of 10 million people that say speak out every day. Mm-hmm. And I know saying speak out's not enough because people still aren't doing it, so it's not working.
Yeah.
But it's still better than not saying it. But equally, I do wish there was a formula what could make these people speak up, because it really is, certainly these days now, PTSD is not, you know, it's not frowned upon. It shouldn't be a tough thing to talk about. Even, you know, majority of people, it might have been branded as a military thing back in the day, PTSD, but it's, you know, it's everything. Mental health's massive anyway. Forget PTSD, it's mental health in general. You know, it's massive these days. Mm-hmm. And I've come across, that's one thing you do come across in private security in London. I've come across a lot of mental health people, you know, who are just not wired up correctly at all. And I mean, general public, when I've been looking after people, just there's a lot of death threats to people we look after get, you know, a lot of stalkers, they're all mental health. So it's a massive problem. And that's not military people, that's just, you know, your normal public. Mm-hmm. So speak up, work through it. It's not. I'm not a doctor. I don't understand exactly how it works. But what I do know is some PTSD could affect you, and it might not affect me. So therefore, it's got to be something obviously to do with the way your brain works. It's not a given to everybody.
Yeah.
So if that's the case, then there's got to be a way for you to be able to control that somehow. And even if you can't remove it, control it to still lead a fairly sensible life and achieve. Everyone can achieve.
Yeah. Good point, mate. And just sorry, last question. So 15 years ago, we never had social media. Mm. Now we have. Was there a big difference then coming from the private security then? Now people know where guests are and celebrities are to 15 years ago.
Yeah,
did it become more difficult?
Yeah, I mean, when I was Michael Jackson, that's 2006, I think I just heard of an email address at the time. I think I got my first email address in that Steve Van that time. And the only coverage from what I really remember was MTV and the Sun newspaper in the morning. In terms of it being a nuisance for a bodyguard, obviously, if you're with a client who's, let's say Michael Jackson's around today and he had Twitter and he tweets, "I'm in the Royal Albert Hall now," and that's great, isn't it? You know, if no one's there, no one knows you. So we normally say to all the celebrity, you know, people we look after, don't post, especially Instagram stories, as a classic. I've had it before where they've been on the plane and they've done the shot on their first class seat going to London, and you know, it all gets worked out. So we try and stop it. Equally, it doesn't always work. Sometimes people still do it because not on purpose, they're just not really thinking. It does cause a problem. It is a big problem. My social media now, for me, it's massive for me now. It really has helped me move on, certainly in the acting thing. And all the pictures on my social media, is nothing was not on Google. Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's nothing really on there, although there's a lot of security pictures, which are my previous life, if you like. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing on there that you can't.
Yeah, you know, so it's a new chapter now. You're just utilising things to your advantage.
Yeah. Basically, I just see it as that's what was. You know, it's not current. Even when I do these articles, I don't talk about the people. It's nothing. It's interesting to people. I've looked after these people. I get that. But when it comes up, you know, what colour pants does Michael Jackson wear? Do you know what I mean? Don't ask me, because I don't get involved in that. And it's not just the protocol thing, but I don't talk about things like that about my mates. That name celebrities, you know, it's no one else's business, is it?
Yeah, so, but if they're wanting the dirt into the press.
I do cross that. And if it starts going down that route, you can forget, you know, I'm just not interested.
Even asking about what they like, you're not really there to build a relationship, you're there to protect.
Yeah,
do you know
exactly
what I mean?
It's a job, and, that, yeah. And it's always like that with people all the time. Yeah, you got on better with some than the others and that, but at the end of the day, you was there to do it, you know, your professional bodyguard, yeah. To do the job. Mm-hmm. So that, and that's it. And that's also, although 17 years later, I'm not doing it anymore, I'd never ruin that now. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd never start going, oh yeah, she was like this and he was like that, yeah. And ruin the 17 years I've had of a good
but
service.
But that's not good, because if you've got a director looking in or somebody that's maybe owns a magazine, they go, well, he's speaking out about, so people don't like that. No. I never out anybody, I've never outed anybody or told anybody, or because don't get me wrong, I failed to fire back a couple of times, but is there a fucking any point? Do you know what I mean?
It
because
doesn't get, it,
yeah,
doesn't
it doesn't get anywhere,
anything,
yeah. And I think, yeah, I look forward to seeing your journey, brother, and what you're going to achieve and what films you're going to come in. I'll say, I fucking had him on my show. And if you're going to direct something, listen, if you're looking for a big handsome Scottish guy, man, you know my number, brother.
Speed
dial. I mean? Yeah, Simon, it's been an absolute pleasure, brother.
And you, mate.
Look forward to seeing your journey.
Cool.
Take care.
Cheers.
You can also watch my podcast on my YouTube channel. The link is in the bio if you'd like to subscribe. You can follow me on my social media platforms to see who my next guest is. Follow me on Facebook at JamesEnglish11. Twitter, JamesEnglish0, Instagram, JamesEnglish2. You can also download these podcasts on iTunes or Spotify.